Hello, everyone. I hope everyone's doing well. Welcome to Tech Ed Europe. My name is Orville McDonald. I'm a product marketing manager on the Visual Studio team. So in today's talk, I'm going to be covering Visual Studio 2010. Okay, you guys are a little tired. Let's get going. So it's Visual Studio 2012. Visual Studio 2010 is a product in market. And I'm here to really focus about what's coming up next. This session is intended to be more of an overview of the product. So I won't be doing any deep dives into any particular parts of it, but I will be doing a broad play over it, so that way all of you will get to know what's in Visual Studio 2012. And at the end of this session, I'll also have a list of tracks where you could then go and do a deeper dive into any particular topics of interest. So let's get right into it. So first off, what am I hoping that everyone gets out of today's session? First, applications are changing. You might have seen a little bit of this during the keynote with Jason Zander earlier today. And we see that consumer and business applications not only are becoming more modern, but they're also starting to converge a bit. And I'll talk a bit about that and how Visual Studio helps you with that. The other thing is around the developer environment, right? When you're busy focused on developing those amazing applications that people are going to love, we want you to have a pleasant experience with it. And I know it sounds kind of funny to talk about pleasant experiences when you're doing very complex tasks, but there's a lot of things that we've added within Visual Studio to help simplify the development process to make you more productive with your time. And the other aspect of it as well is that development is really a team sport, right? We often think of the stereotype of the lone coder, alone in their office, lights off, just drilling down, focusing on algorithms. But the reality of it is that a lot of applications are developed in teams, whether that's small teams of like 2 to 3 developers or large teams that span geographies throughout the world. Visual Studio has a lot of application lifecycle management functionality that will help you get there. So these are the 3 things that we're going to cover within the context of Visual Studio 2012 in this talk. So let's start off with some trends, right? We see a lot of trends happening nowadays. The first one is this notion of being connected. How many people in the room today are carrying a smartphone with them right now? I see a show of hands. Okay, a large portion of the room. And many of you may remember that just a few years ago, there used to be this notion of offline and online. You know, when you're on a flight, like some of us were traveling from Redmond over to Amsterdam, you would tell your coworkers, I'm going to be offline while I'm on the plane. However, even now, a lot of planes have Wi-Fi on it. And with smartphones, we're constantly connected. And with that constant connection comes a new type of experience. But not only that, because we're connected with small portable devices, in this case, cell phones like I'm describing, in other cases, maybe tablets, the interfaces have changed. The notion of having a mouse and keyboard with you at all times doesn't always work. So we see the enablement of touch-enabled devices, and if you start thinking even more future-bound, we're starting to see a lot more speech. For example, if you have a Windows phone, it recognizes speech commands, and we're seeing this happen all across the board where the inputs you're using are starting to change. Also on top of these changes, we've also seen this notion of the consumerization of IT. This whole notion that as people use these new touch-connected devices in their own personal lives, that they in turn want to bring that with them to the office. And then it leaves you wondering, well, what does that mean for my organization? You know, what are the security policies I need to wonder about? What are the type of applications that need to be developed? And if those applications are in fact different than the regular line of business applications that we create today for the desktop, how do we get the two to coincide? Underpinning all of this is cloud services. We see that with the cloud, hopefully we'll get that whoever's in the back, if somehow the volume in the next room, if that could be controlled a bit, that'd help a little bit. So in the case with cloud services, we now enable people to have their business logic centralized in the cloud and in turn have different clients that interact with it, right? So then you start wondering, well then how do I enable these cloud services and what are the tools that I need to enable those and what are the clients that I build to connect with all of that? And then the final aspect of it is this whole social aspect. And when I talk about social, it's more than just tweeting with your friends or being on Facebook and seeing what your family's up to. But development has become a lot more social. As I was mentioning earlier, one of the big trends we see is around team development. And not just team development where all of you are in the same room, But in some cases, you may have some people in the Ukraine, other people in Russia, some people in the US, other people in India or China or wherever the geography is. Some of these people have never even met each other. So at the same time, they're collaborating on complex coding projects, and they need the right tools that will make them very efficient and productive as they work together. So when we think of these five trends, and really what does it mean for the modern application and for modern development, that was really what fed our influence for Visual Studio 2012. And the tag we have for Visual Studio 2012 is turning ideas into exceptional apps, meaning that these great powerful tools are available to anyone from the student who's alone in their room coding, moonlighting as a project, to those who work in large enterprises as part of vast teams that are writing the banking or healthcare or financial or other type of software that really makes the world go round. We want to make sure that within Visual Studio and the breadth of Microsoft platforms, that we have the right technologies to enable you to create the type of ideas or implement the type of apps that you're thinking about today. So let's jump into the Visual Studio family and what does that mean? Many people, when they think of Visual Studio, often think solely of an IDE. They think it's just this client piece that sits on Windows, you write your code, you deploy it, done. Well, we actually think of Visual Studio as a broader set of solutions that tie in together. You can see here, we have our Visual Studio family, and at the very core of it is Team Foundation Server. How many people in the room here use Team Foundation Server in their existing projects? Oh, great. So many of you are already familiar with it. For those of you who are unfamiliar with it, Team Foundation Server is not only the core of the Visual Studio family, but it hosts a lot of what we call the application and lifecycle management tools. So these are the type of things like managing your projects, your work items. The real collaboration and social aspect of coding gets tied through here. But for some people, Team Foundation Server, they need something that's hosted in the cloud. Well, we're supporting you with that as well. We've announced Team Foundation Service a while ago. Previously, it was only available if you had a preview code. We've now opened it up to everyone. So if you're interested in Team Foundation Service, whether you're new to Team Foundation Server or you're already on Team Foundation Server and you want to try a cloud-hosted solution, just go to tfspreview.com. You could sign up, you could join your team to it, and you could start playing with it today. There's also a few sessions that will be covering the Team Foundation Service, and I will touch on it very lightly in today's session. As you can see in the semicircle that surrounds the Team Foundation Server, there's a host of tools, everything from project management to requirements management. And when you think of those things, you might be stopping to say, hey, wait a second, I don't do that. My business analyst does that, or my project manager does that. Well, once again, as I was saying, when we think of the Visual Studio family, it's a solution for the entire team. It's not just about your developers. It's having your business analyst and your project managers be a part of the development team. We also have version control, build automation, test case management for your testers, and for your operations teams, lab management functionality as well. So you may remember earlier today during the keynote where we talked a lot about DevOps and this whole notion of developers and operations really being tied at the hips. And in some organizations, the developer and the operations person is in fact the exact same person. So why not have the right tools in place that enables them to work together? With Team Foundation Server, that's when we can start getting into the traditional IDEs, which we really span across three main SKUs: Professional, Premium, and Ultimate. These tools enable you to interact with all of Microsoft's platforms, whether it's Windows, SharePoint, whether it's Windows Server if you're deploying web applications, or maybe even Azure with the cloud, or database applications with SQL Server. All of those tie through with Visual Studio. And then with that, we have our three notions of access the platforms you need to access, develop the type of applications that you and your organizations need, and integrate across the different technologies that you need to work with, whether ours or whether you need to interoperate with other non-Microsoft technologies. So enough about the Visual Studio family. What does this mean for all of you in the room? What is the developer experience? And what did we try to do to make that developer experience better for all of you? The first thing we tried to do was actually reduce a lot of the complexity that you see. So one thing you'll notice with the IDE is that we've made it a lot more bare. Some people have complained that maybe we might have gone too far, that we might have stripped out too much color. And we've listened to that feedback, and we've made some tweaks, which I'll actually show today. But not only that, but with a lot of the toolbars that you see in Visual Studio, we found that that actually had taken up a lot of the space that would have been used for coding. So what we've done is we've stripped a lot of them out, and we've kept it really focused to the task that you're doing at the time. So that way we could give you 2 to 3 more lines of code, so that way you have more space to really focus on the code that you're writing. We also try to simplify tasks, minimize the amount of steps that it takes to do any given thing. And we hope that that will shine through with some of the demos that we'll be doing today. The final thing is really around usability. We often think about usability in the case of our customers. What makes it more usable for them? Well, how about for all of you who are writing code? We try to make the tool more usable in that aspect as well, and I'll also highlight some of those things. So let's jump into some of the platforms. So the first thing I want to talk about is building for Windows. Everyone's familiar with Windows. It's the most popular operating system on the planet, over 400 million installations worldwide. That number might even be higher. I have to check the latest stats. And Visual Studio is the key tool for developing for Windows. When we think about developing for Windows within 2012, there's a few things you should think about. The first one is around desktop applications. So for those of you who are developing for Windows today, whether that's Windows 7 or an earlier version, you're very familiar to that programming style. And we will continue to support that with Visual Studio 2012. However, for those of you who have been following Windows 8, you might also be hearing about these new Metro-style applications. And in order to develop Metro-style applications, you need Visual Studio 2012 with Windows 8. How many people in the room today are trying out the Windows 8 Consumer Preview? Okay, so there's quite a few people. For those of you who have not tried it yet, it's actually a free download. So if you have a spare machine, it's actually pretty stable. You can even run on your primary machines. A lot of us in Redmond do so. Feel free to install it and try it out with Visual Studio 2012 and see some of the new opportunities that that will open up. But kind of even beyond just the standard Windows development and this new Metro style, we also support graphics-intensive programming. So you might be working on some scientific modeling application, or maybe you're a game developer. Well, we have a lot of new enhanced improvements for C++ development that we're supporting, and especially for graphics-intensive applications. And then also for Windows drivers development, we'll continue to support that as well. So let's jump into the first topic. So this is around asynchronous programming. So the one thing I want to call out from my own personal experiences, before I went into product marketing, I was actually on the product program management side working on Windows Live. And Windows Live, large application, massive authentication platform, and one of my jobs was actually performance and scalability. And I remember there'd be times where there'd be some performance issue, and the whole team would rally around, and we'd really dig in, and we'd say, let's find this issue. So we search, we perform profiling, we do all these tests. Finally, we find the issue. We're all high-fiving each other, we're really happy. But then guess what? Reality sets in, and we actually have to fix the problem. And this is a solution. This is an issue that I know many of you have faced before, where you take a look at the problem, and you're like, well, we could make this change, and it's quote-unquote a one-line-of-code change. But when you go make the change, there's this very large regression hit, because that code has impacts, and it ripples throughout the project. And then you're in a situation where you're debating whether you really want to re-architect your code or not. Well, one of the great things we include with the .NET Framework 4.5 is this asynchronous programming style where you can write synchronous-like code in asynchronous code in a synchronous-like way. And I'm actually going to demonstrate that for all of you today. So if I switch over. So the first thing I want to point out is this is Visual Studio 2012 for those of you who haven't seen it before. And what I have here is my Fabricam Fiber customer support application. And there's one key thing I would like everybody to actually notice. So right here, my target framework is the .NET Framework 4.0. The reason why this is significant is for those of you who use Visual Studio 2010, and you might have been evaluating it, and you opened up a project that was built in a previous version of the .NET Framework, it automatically upgraded your project with no way to return. So if you were just evaluating it, or if some members of your team were on the new version and other people were on the old version, all of a sudden you were in this messed up state where you couldn't go back. Well, we now support round tripping. It's one of the new features in Visual Studio 2012, where you could actually run previous versions of the .NET framework within Visual Studio 2012 without the risk of your project upgrading. So it's actually a really cool feature, especially if you're evaluating things. So let's go in through and run the application. So you can see here it's a pretty straightforward customer support app. I'm going to go through. I'm going to search on a customer. I see Ken Sanchez has popped up. I have some notes. So I'm going to go through and write something. Let's say, hello, TechEd. And let's make it even more special. Hello, TechEd Europe. So I have my notepad, and I want to go and I want to see previous tickets for Ken. So I click on it. I want to write some notes, not responding. I want to move my application around, not responding either. My application's hanging, but wait a second, my tickets have shown up. So we know that the application works, but there's some process in here that's holding everything up. And many of us have called customer support agents in the past and have been told, please hold on, my tool is hanging. Terrible customer experience. It's something that we definitely want to fix. So let's see what this is going to require. So let me go through and close my application, or close the running app. And I kind of know where this sits. I have a feeling that the problem sits in this method I have. And in the past, if you had a large solution, you'd have to really know your code to find out where your different methods were, or you have to do the tedious process of clicking through. Well, with Visual Studio 2012, we now have this search solution. So I'm just going to go in, and I'm going to type the name of my method. And you can see here that it searched across my entire solution, and I have both a button that has that name, but I also have a method that has the same name as well. In this case, I know the issues with the method. So let me go through and click on it. Here it is. I'm taking a look at my method. I see that it's pretty straightforward. I log that a permissions request was made. Go a bit further down. I'm initializing a proxy. And then this is where I go and I actually get the customer tickets. So this is the code I want to update. And in order to do this, I'm going to take advantage of the task parallel library updates that are in the .NET framework 4.5. So let me go through and change my target framework. I get a warning message saying, is this in fact what you want to do? And it is. So I'll go and accept it. There we go. Let me search for it again. Put my method. So the task parallel library sits in the threading namespace. I'm going to go and add that right now. Just like that. And so all of you don't have to watch me write a bunch of code. I'm going to go in and just add it quickly here. It is called async web call. There we go. So you can see I've moved my proxy information to its own method over here. And now I'm going to go and I'm going to delete this line of code. And I'm going to add a keyword. And this keyword is going to be await, which pretty much says that whatever comes after this, let the application continue running, but still await for this to complete. And the name of my method was getDataAsync. So I'm going to add it in. And the first thing everyone will notice is I'm getting this red line under what I wrote. So you see that there's an error. And the reason why that error shows up is because there's one additional thing I need to do to the method. I actually need to declare it as type async. So with that there, it's going to go through it, resolves on the bottom. Let me go run my application again. Click search. Ken's information shows up. Once again, I'll write a note. Let me get the tickets. I can continue to type. I can move my application around. And there shows up the tickets. So you can see very easily, I was able to take an application that was hanging, because it was hanging on one particular call, go through, change my .NET framework to 4.5, search my solution, find where the issue is, add two keywords, await and async, and with that, I've now made a synchronous application asynchronous. So that's some of the great functionality that we're adding to Visual Studio 2012 to make programming easier for all of you. Once again, it's really about being more productive and simplifying the development experience. So let's talk a bit about Metro-style applications. So this is something that's fairly new. And how many people in the room have written a Metro-style application before? Okay, so very few people. Okay, so this will be good. This will be some new stuff for most people in the room. So let's start off with, well, what's special about Metro? Why did we come up with Metro? Many people think that it's just this UI design, right? It's a way to make your apps look pretty if you're not a designer. I'm personally not a designer, so I kind of like these things. They help me out a lot. But that was not actually the motivation behind it. The key thing is that as you go to different form factors, the real estate changes, and the way you input things change. And with that, you need a way that you can kind of glance and go, a way that you can consume information very quickly and easily. For those of you who have traveled into Amsterdam, as you're going through the airport, whether you spoke the language that was written on the signs or not, you're probably very easily able to figure out how to get around the airport, primarily because of how the signs were laid out. They have symbols that are very intuitive to what you're thinking of. Also the text, very big letters, bold, so you can really pick up things on a real glance and go way. And that was some of the same motivation that went behind the Metro style. As you can see from my picture up here, Metro works not just on the desktop, but on laptops, on tablets. If you have the Windows phone, you will see it there too. There's other people who have copied the Metro style within their applications. So it's something that's really being spread out throughout the Microsoft ecosystem, and it will also help you when you develop a lot of applications. To develop Metro style applications, as I mentioned earlier, you need two things to start with. You need Windows 8, and you also need Visual Studio 2012. Within Visual Studio 2012, we've included a lot of tools, especially around designers within Visual Studio itself, and then we've also added Blend, which I'll talk more about in a second. And these things help you really lay out your application and design it the way that you want it to behave. There's three programming models that are supported. One of them being C++ with XAML. So for those of you who are native developers, you will be able to continue to target Windows in a Metro style. Also for the .NET developers, we continue to support C# and VB.NET with XAML for your applications. But then for those of you who are web developers, who spend your life in CSS and HTML and JavaScript, we will also support that as a programming model for Windows-style applications. So depending on what your skill level is in any particular language or technology, we actually welcome you for developing Metro-style applications. You could just come with your existing skills and start writing apps. For those of you who are used to writing HTML, JavaScript, CSS, we often emphasize that what you're really bringing is your existing skills with you when you're developing these Windows 8 Metro-style applications. You could reuse some of your code, but because operating in a browser is different than running natively on Windows, there are some programming things that are different. So those are some things that you should really note if you think that you're going to take your existing website and just convert it over to a Windows 8 application. It doesn't work that seamlessly, but you can re-leverage a lot of your existing assets. In addition to Visual Studio, the other thing that we've included within Visual Studio is Blend. The Blend works great with HTML, and I'm actually going to be showing a bit of Blend. It's a product that I'm pretty excited about. How many people in the room have actually used Blend before? Okay, so quite a few people have. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Blend, it's more of a designer tool. So if you think of Visual Studio as what you use to really get in, write your algorithms, write your code, get it super perfect and robust, you could think of Blend being the equal type of tool, but for your design. It really helps streamline some of the animations if you have storyboarding or those type of aspects within your application, or it could also help you get things pixel perfect or even color perfect as well. So with that, let's actually jump into our next set of demos. So the first thing I want everyone to see is we're going to actually start off with file new. So we're actually going to show like a new type of project. You can see that this is a VB app, and there's various templates that are available to us. So one great thing with Visual Studio, historically and still continues through 2012, is that it often includes great templates to help you get started and to get running very quickly. So you can develop a blank application if that's what you choose to do. You could also develop a grid application. And the thing to note with grid applications is that they're really great at like summarizing groups of information and then drilling in as you need to. And if you even need more context behind it, you'll notice that on the side, we actually show a visual preview of what some of these templates will look like. Once again, reducing the amount of time that you spend figuring out which template to use and also improving the usability by letting you just go and glance and say, okay, this is the type of app I want. In our case, what we're actually going to focus on is a split app. And what a split app does is it starts off with a group of information, and then from there, it drills down into another group of information if you need to create subgroups and then go into details. So let's go through and click that. We'll create our project. And the first thing I want to call out as you take a look at this file is that right up top, if I scroll over a bit, you will notice that we actually include a link. And the reason why we include this link is often we include these great templates, but then when you're ready to refine them to suit your own particular needs, you then have to go to MSDN, you have to start searching around, you might have to go to some blog that you trust, just to figure out what's going on. Well, we want to actually simplify the process once again and just include the link right up here. So you could click on this, it will take you directly to MSDN, and it will give you all the information you need to refine the templates even further. So we have that going, and what we're going to do now is we're actually just going to go and test this application out. So I'm going to go and run it in the simulator. And another thing to notice here is that we have a choice on where we want to run our apps. We can run it locally on Windows. We could run it within a simulator for those of you who want to create a tablet application but do not yet have a tablet to test it on. Or you could run it on a remote machine. For those of you who watched Jason Zander's ARM demo earlier today during the keynote, those were actually running on remote machines, in this case the ARM tablets, connected to Visual Studio. So we have in the simulator. We'll go and run it. So it'll show up. The first thing I want to call out is that this is skinned to look just like a Windows tablet. You can see here we even have our start button. So I'll click on that. You can see the instance of Windows 8 that I'm running. You can see it there in the background. You can even see the username I have for this machine, demo. So we'll go back into it. You can see here that we have the different groups. You could just go through and click on a group. You'll see we have information in there. It includes a lot of fake dummy data. The reason why this is great is that if you're developing an application that's client and then maybe you have your data sitting up in the cloud, your cloud service might actually be developed in parallel, or maybe you're even going to develop it after the fact. Well, we include a lot of data so that way you could get up and running right away and develop the type of application you need. You'll see on the side that we include a lot of great options to simulate different things within the simulator that you'd want to do if you actually had the physical physical tablet in your hands. We have different things like take a screenshot. So maybe you're working on something with a team and you want to show maybe your manager or your client what the application is going to look like. You could just go and take a screen capture and then email that photo off to them and they'll be able to see the UI. The other thing too is that tablets are portable devices. So all of us are sitting here in Amsterdam, but I might want to simulate conditions somewhere else. So I could just click on set location. It's currently set to Amsterdam, to this building right here. But I could do it to go to New York, to London, to Cairo, or maybe I'm developing a hiking application. So I could do other things like set my altitude in meters if I have specialized functionality that works that way. So from wherever your office is, you could actually create local experiences on a tablet all from your simulator. Pretty handy. The other thing, too, is that we know that a lot of these tablets will be in various sizes. So with that, we actually include different screen resolutions. Once again, trying to get to that pixel-perfect UI, you could go through and just click on whatever option you think is best. One thing about working on a computer is that we see the tablet is just perfectly upright. And we know in reality it's never going to be perfectly upright. So you'll want to test how your application looks within different orientations. So you could just go through, and we have support for changing the orientation of applications. You can even see with this template, it automatically resizes and reimages things as we move around. The other thing, too, is that you may need touch support. And you're probably on a computer that is not touch-enabled. Well, in this case, we have different buttons for that. So I could just go like that, go over. You can see I have the little circle. and I could just scroll around, and I could simulate touch. So it's all pretty handy stuff, and all this is included for you directly with the simulator. So you can see the simulator is a very powerful tool for creating these mobile experiences, even if you don't have the tablet. So that was a quick walk around the simulator. Let's actually jump into an application now. Go through. Let me close a few windows. So the first one we're going to jump into is actually an imaging application. This was a free sample that I've taken off of MSDN, so all of you are free to grab the sample later and play with it as you please. A few things I want to call out. The first thing is that for those of you who are familiar with working with XAML, I get this preview up in this region. And what the preview does is it gives me the shape of the tablet. So instead of having to wait till I go to a simulator in the debugging experience to make sure that my UI is right, I can actually do that directly within Visual Studio. I can scroll down, you can see the outline of it. But then I could also do a split view, which I have here, and I could actually see my XAML below. So I could go through and tweak it, and then at the same time see my changes up above. The other thing, too, is that the simulator is great, but often we'll want to find issues even before we reach that stage. In that case, I actually have these device options, and I could do different things, like I could put my application in portrait mode. And you can see that it switched over right there. And I'll put it back. The other thing, too, is that for themes, so in the case with this application, I already have it preset to a white background. But if it just went with the default, I could actually change things from dark to light to high contrast. And this is very powerful because depending on the type of tablet that you're running on, people might change the background. Maybe they want a black background, maybe they want a white background. And you want to make sure that your characters don't get flushed out depending on what they choose. So you could actually go and test for those as well. So we can see I have some great things for designing my app directly within Visual Studio. However, there's a change I want to make to it. I want to actually make this a Visual Studio branded app. So in order for me to do that, what I'll do is I'm going to take a look at this, and I'll just right-click on it, and I have a list of options. But the key one I care about is this one right here, which is Open in Blend. You can see that this is Blend for Visual Studio. So once again, Blend is now part of Visual Studio. When you buy Visual Studio, this is just a free part of it. No longer a separate application like what we had before as part of the Expression Suite. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Blend, a few things I want to point out. You have your XAML design service right here, and you can see as I mouse over different elements, they get highlighted. And there's cool things I could do with that. I have a list of my entire project. So even though I open just this one particular file in Blend, I actually have a list of my entire project. So I could go through and make various changes to different files as I see fit. And then I also have this objects and timeline, which shows me the different objects within my application. And if I have animation supported, I could actually click through the timeline as well and make edits. So the first thing I want to do is the white background's cool, but I want to make this Visual Studio purple. So let's go through and see if I could do that. I go through, I click on my layout. We can see that within my properties, a bunch of properties have showed up. The one I want to really call out is within my editor, the ability to change the colors. You can see here I could just click there. I could drag it down. My color palette's changing. I'm seeing that I'm entering the purple realm. Click there. I could drag in, and I could vary the types of purple that I want. However, in this case, I know the specific RGBs that correspond with Visual Studio 2012. So I want to set it exactly as I need to. So instead of having to focus here and move it around and hope to get it right, I could actually just type it in here. So I will go and do that. Enter that. So my purple is just perfect, just the way I like it. But I see inside here, I have all this white region. So let me go and get rid of that. Instead of having to go through again and type the exact RGB or move my dropper to the right part of the color, I could just go and click on last colors. Shows up. My purple's there. It's starting to look good. But now I have one problem. I see that my black text is really flushing in, and people won't be able to read that. So I actually want to go through and change that to white. So let me go through there, click that, drag it up. See, that's turning to white. So pretty straightforward stuff. And you can see that I'm very easily able to change my application without having to do anything too strenuous. It's pretty fast. So you click white. Take a look. That's starting to look a lot better. I'm liking it. I know within this region, something's going to be rendered. So let me go and click on, clicked on the wrong file. Go into my imaging properties. Showed up again. Let's go and just change a lot of this text to white as well. So once again, I could just select everything. It's really easy. In the past where you might have had to say, okay, I need to go into XAML and figure out every single section to change, with Blend, I could just click on the things, and I just point and click, and I get it going. Back to my main page. I see this SDK samples text. Let me go and get rid of that. Very simple. Let me delete it. The final thing left is I have this Windows logo, and I'd actually like to change my Windows logo to correspond with Visual Studio. So let me go through and click that one. I can see that I have a list of assets. I'll change it to the logo. Visual Studio is showing up way too large. I would like to actually streamline that. Instead of having to go through and do a lot of tweaks to my XAML, I could just do something very simple. I could say stretch to fill the region. And then in my layout, change my height to 33. Looks perfect. Let me go through and save this. And with that save, let me go back to Visual Studio. Now you see I get a warning, right? And the cool thing about this warning is that there's a connection between Visual Studio and Blend to the point where Visual Studio knows that I've now made this change in Blend. So I'll go through and I'll accept that. In my preview, we see that everything's been updated. And let me go and run the application. Before I ran the application within the simulator, this time let me run it on the actual local machine. Shows up, everything's in purple. You notice it's Metro style, it consumes the entire field. There's no chrome around it. And now I could just go through and just use my application, open things. And just like that, I was able to take an existing sample and then with the use of Blend, quickly tweak it to suit my needs. So now I actually want to show another style of Metro style application. So this is one in C++. This is, once again, another sample. And this is for a game. And it's written in C++ so we could get that performance that we need. And I'm going to run it in the simulator. This laptop that I'm running all these demos off of actually has a touch-enabled screen. So the cool thing is that as I look at my application, as it shows up, I could go through and just touch my screen. And I can see I have my shooting game. And I could go through and I could play it just like that. So I could go through and actually take advantage of the touch-enabled functionality. You can see I'm not the best gamer because I seem to be missing a lot. Okay, there we go. But I could quickly go through and I could actually take advantage of the hardware capabilities that are available on my machine and test that within the simulator so that way I could get even more of the end-user experience. So you can see that we've actually seen quite a few cool things within the Metro-style applications. We saw that one, it includes a lot of great default templates across VB, C#, C++, HTML, JavaScript to help me get up and running developing Metro-style applications very quickly. We also see that with the combined usage of Blend, I could go through and I could update my applications fairly easily and tweak them to suit my needs and get them pixel perfect and have that great tie-in combination between Blend and Visual Studio so I could work closely between my designers and my developers. And then the final thing we saw is that I could use C++ to write really fast, performant native code and take advantage of the physical capabilities of my computers within the simulator to simulate different types of tasks. So we've included a lot of power for developing Metro-style applications. So that was Windows. Now let's talk a bit about the cloud and the web. How many people here today are taking advantage of Windows Azure or some other cloud platform? Okay, so there's a few people, and I'm sure throughout TechEd you're going to hear a lot about the cloud, so I won't spend a lot of time really talking about the benefits of it, but I will talk about how you can leverage Visual Studio to take best advantage of it. We just recently had a release in, earlier this month, in the month of June, enabling people to go out and get the SDK that will work within Visual Studio 2012. So if you were previously writing Azure applications, you had to use Visual Studio 2010, you can now use 2012. And we also have support for side-by-side SDKs. So if you're using a previous version of the Windows Azure SDK, you could continue to use that with your existing Azure projects and then use the latest versions on your latest ones and not have to worry about upgrading all your projects all at once, We've included some great functionality for profiling and IntelliTrace in production. So once again, you could take the full benefits that you get with Visual Studio that you would use in-house and take advantage of them in the cloud. And for those of you who haven't used IntelliTrace before, you could almost think of it as a DVR for your application. It's the ability to run your app, find an error, and get rid of the whole no repro problem. Because you could then go through IntelliTrace, take a look at the IntelliTrace file, and figure out what happened, and then debug the issues. It's a very powerful tool, great stuff. So with that, let's jump into another demo again. Minimize a few of these windows. So here I have my contact manager. Let me just go and run the application. And it's a very basic application. It's an ASP.NET app. And pretty much what it does is it just enables me to track different people in my life. And with that, the way it's handled is that there's a local DB, and it's ASP.NET running an IIS all within the same machine. And what I want to do is I want to take this existing application, and I want to move it to the cloud. And what we're going to do is we're going to actually go through an experience like many of you would do if you wanted to take your existing ASP.NET applications and move them to Azure. Let me go ahead and close that. So we pull it up, and the first thing we need to do is we need to take advantage of the cloud for our data. So I have a connection string right here, and this connection string connects to my local database. What you could often do is within the tools that we have, you could actually copy the schema of your database into the cloud, but in this case, I want more than just a schema. I actually want to take my data with me up there as well. So to do that, I'm going to actually take advantage of the SQL Azure Migration Wizard. This is available on CodePlex. This is where I downloaded it from. So for any of you who are interested in trying this demo, just go to codeplex.com, search on SQL Azure Migration Wizard, and you should be able to find it fairly easily. So go through there. Let me open it up. I'm just going to migrate a database, enter my local information. I can see that I have my contact manager DB. That's exactly what I want to migrate. Click Next. I'm going to take all my tables, go through. And what it will do now is it will actually generate a SQL creation script for me. You can see it's all showing up here. It's done. Great. Next thing we want to do is we actually want to connect to the server. And this server is my server up in SQL Azure. So if I just pull out my credentials. And I got to tell you, there's nothing like entering credentials in front of an audience of technically savvy people who will probably hack my account while I'm doing the demo and play a prank on me. But hopefully all of you are kind to the demoers and will not do that. So we're just going through now. We're connecting. It looks like I entered the credentials correctly. I can see contacts. That's what I want. Click Next. So that script that was just generated, what we're now going to do is we're going to run this against SQL in the cloud on SQL Azure. So it's going to go through. It's creating the tables for me. It's going to start bulk copying everything up. So this will take a moment. So we'll just let that run in the background. And the next thing I want to do is I'm going to go back to my app. And I'm actually going to change this to now take advantage of that data that sits in the cloud. So I'm going to go through and comment out my old connection string. And bring in the new one. And to show that, yes, in fact, this is connecting in the cloud as I expose my credentials. You can see there's my username and password. You can see the server that I want to talk to is right there. So I'm now connecting up in the cloud. So let's go and run this application again. Hopefully we'll have finished copying everything over. And you can see we're now pulling down the data. So very easily, I was able to go and take my existing SQL database and export it up into the cloud. So the next step that I want to do is I actually want to move my full website over. Once again, some of you may be thinking like, oh, I'm going to have to go through and re-architect this code. We actually make it very easy to move an ASP.NET app to the cloud. I'll go through, I'll click on my project, and the next thing I want to do is I want to add a Windows Azure Cloud Service project. Go through that, I'll do all the configurations, and the key thing it's going to do is it's actually going to create a web role for me. Let me see that, that's great. We can see I have my web role here. I have my different VM size, which I could go through and I could change depending on the type of application. And we could do all of this within Visual Studio itself. So this actually helps quite a bit as far as like getting up and running fairly quickly. You can see I could change all my settings. That's all great. The other thing that's cool is we have caching. So if you have an application that needs to be very performant, you could actually take advantage of memory caching up in the cloud, and you could control that all within Visual Studio. For those of you who are doing a lot of Azure development already, you may be wondering, how come you haven't seen me go to the portal yet? Well, the great thing is I could actually do everything I need to do now directly within Visual Studio, and I don't have to go to the portal. So it's very great, once again, simplifying the development process for everything that you're doing. So now I actually want to go and publish it. So once again, next step is just simple publish to Windows Azure. I've already have a subscription that's imported into here. If I didn't, I just have to click sign in to download credentials. I'd be able to download a file that I could then import into Visual Studio. And that would have all the information I needed in order to take my app and publish it up to the cloud. Through and click publish. It's going to build it. Publish has started, so let's see what's going on here. Yep, let's replace it. And you can see I'm getting a full status update on what exactly is going with this app as it starts deploying to the cloud. So we'll take a moment. So in the interest of time for the demo, I actually have this already pre-deployed. So actually, I'll pull that up. Then you can see I have my application, and to show that it's actually sitting in the cloud, you can see right here, it's at myazuredemocloudapp.net. All of you are able to reach it today. So you can see that kind of in front of a live audience, right, in just literally a matter of minutes, I was able to take an existing ASP.NET MVC application, I was able to take my data, export it into the cloud, not just a schema copy, but copy all the data with it too, update my connection string so I could talk to my data in the cloud. Once I verified that that worked, then publish the entire site into Azure, and I was able to do that all within Visual Studio itself. So you can see, once again, we've really simplified the development experience for a lot of things. And you'll notice I'll say that a lot, but it's because I'm pretty excited about some of the things that we've done. Once again, it's a pretty amazing release. On my clicker. So that's about Azure and developing to the cloud. So the next thing now is about web development. And this is for how many web developers are in the audience today? Let's see hands. Okay, so quite a few people. So many of you are probably wondering, well, I'm hearing a lot about HTML5. You know, with HTML5, does that mean I now abandon my ASP.NET? What exactly does that mean for my development? Well, I'm happy to say that if you're an ASP.NET developer, you're also an HTML5 developer. And what I mean by that is that you could actually set your ASP.NET projects to render HTML5 code. You could take advantage of some of the new tags, like video, for example. And the HTML5 spec continues to evolve, and Microsoft's committed to evolving with it. Not only can you use HTML5 for your web applications with ASP.NET, but even as I mentioned earlier, you could use HTML5 and CSS3 to develop Windows Metro style applications. So once again, you're getting more bang for your investment, more bang for your buck or your euro as you're going through and you're developing these applications. Also with Internet Explorer 10, once again, continued enhancements and improvements and support for HTML5. And we'll see that to continue within Internet Explorer as the standard evolves. And also within Visual Studio, a lot of JavaScript, CSS editing, debugging, and profiling. Once again, making it a lot easier for you to find the issues as you develop these applications and make it more robust and better. When we think about the tooling, some other things I'd like to call out, for example, is mobile sites. I started off in the beginning talking about how we're always online. We're never offline anymore. And a lot of that has to do with cell phones and smartphones in particular. Well, we actually have support for our mobile devices, and we have specific templates for ASP.NET to create these mobile devices. You may remember in Scott Gu's presentation earlier today during the keynote, where he actually created a mobile message app. Well, that was all created using these mobile templates. Not only do we have the mobile templates for you in ASP.NET, but we also have support for jQuery Mobile. So the great thing with jQuery Mobile is that you get all the benefits of jQuery on your mobile devices. It's a common standard. You could go out and you could play with it. We also have scripting and controls, which I touched a little bit on. And we have a pretty comprehensive web platform. For those of you who haven't tried it, feel free to go out and get the web platform installer. And with that, you can install everything you need to develop web applications using the Microsoft stack. And not only the Microsoft stack, but it also includes other stacks as well. Some open source code. You can install projects like WordPress as well. So it's a great way to get up and running with the different type of technologies you need to do the job that you're trying to do. The other thing with a lot of the HTML5 code that gets rendered by ASP.NET is that it's more SEO compliant. You may remember in earlier versions of ASP.NET, where you'd go through and you'd have some other type of tagging in there that necessarily wasn't necessarily your standard kind of HTML coding. Well, we've made it very clean, so that way as different search engines, whether it be Bing or Google or future ones, crawl your site, they're better able to get the information they need and help you get better relevancy in the different searches that you want to appear in. I touched a bit about the HTML and the CSS. The other thing I want to call out is IntelliSense. So IntelliSense is this really great technology that we have that helps you really be productive as you're coding and helps you find different methods and objects and get running. Well, we also now have that support in CSS as well. So instead of having to sit there and try to remember all the CSS code, you could actually use IntelliTrace to help you out, once again making you more productive as you do your work. And also, we have this new feature, Page Inspector. And Page Inspector, I have to say, if you're a web developer, you're going to love Page Inspector. I personally love Page Inspector, at least. And what that does is it enables you to explore your page and your server code simultaneously. So that way, as you have problems, you're able to debug them that much faster because you have both running, both server and client, and you have insights into both at the exact same time. So with that, this will actually jump into our next demo, which is around the web. So here I have this FiberCam Fiber web application. And before I run it, I actually would like to call something out. So you'll see that I have a list of browsers. You see Firefox, you see Chrome. I could have Safari up there. If there's some new browser, I could put that in there as well. Pretty much any browser that you have installed on your machine, you could now deploy your code to it. So what that means is that in the past, where if you wanted to do browser compat, you would run your application, you would get it all perfect in Internet Explorer with Visual Studio, and then you would deploy it locally on your machine and then open all these different browsers as you try to figure out if it's going to work. Well, now you can just run it directly into the browser that you choose and do your browser compat testing that way. Once again, reducing the amount of steps that it takes you to develop those great, awesome websites that many of you are focused on building. In this case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to start off in Internet Explorer. We'll go and run the application. So here's my application. It's showing up. It's a logon page. And I have a question for the audience. Does anybody notice a problem with our logon page? Feel free to shout it out if you see it. So the key thing there is that we have a logon page, but the problem with it is that I actually see an authenticated user, which defeats the whole purpose. You can't be logging in if you're already authenticated and vice versa. So there's something wrong with this page, and I would really like to debug it and find out what's wrong. So within Internet Explorer, we include this great tool called the F12 Developer Tools. And with the F12 Developer Tools, it enables me to go through and check out what's going on with this page. So I'll click on that. Shows up on the bottom. I could see that, you know, I have my DOM. Go through, and let me just inspect the page. So I could go through, and as I go over different areas, I'll scroll down a bit. Could click scroll over different parts. Let me click on the name, figure out where that's coming from. So I can see the style sheet that's involved with it. So I have some CSS showing up. I can see the HTML tags. And this is great for me seeing kind of like what's going on with my HTML code. But there's still a problem, right? I'm able to debug what's showing up in the browser. But what I'm not seeing is a corresponding code on the server that would help me find this issue. So what would normally happen is I would take a look at this and say, okay, well, I think I know where that code is coming from. Then I'd have to go back into Visual Studio, try to hunt it down, fix the problem, and then go back and go through it again. It would involve a lot of round trips, and it could potentially lead to a lot of frustration if there's a lot of drilling and I can't exactly figure out what's going on. So let's go and stop this. Now we're going to try it again. So if I take a look at my list of browsers, many of them are familiar to all of you, but there's one new browser that I want to call out. This one, which is the Page Inspector. And what the Page Inspector is, it's a browser within my developer tool that enables me to go and debug client-side and server-side at the exact same time to better help me drill down into where my problems are coming from. So I'll click on the Page Inspector, and let's run it. So the first thing I'd like everyone to notice is that within this window, you notice that I actually have a browser. The exact same page I was just looking at has now rendered within Visual Studio itself. Similar to the F12 tools, I can see I have my styles over here. And I also have my HTML over here. So I'm getting a lot of that same functionality that I had within Internet Explorer, but this time within Visual Studio. And the powerful thing of now having this show up in Visual Studio is I could do cool things like inspect this page. So I can look through, and I see that I have Drew Robbins' name there, but that's not actually Drew Robbins' picture. So I'm kind of curious why that's showing up. So let me go through and grab my inspect, and I'll mouse over. I can see I go to Drew Robbins. But another thing you may notice is that as I move my mouse around, something magical happened. You'll see that I actually have this profile code starting to show up. What it does is it gives me an automatic preview. I don't even have to click on any of these elements. But as I scroll over the page, the underlying code that's used to render that page starts to appear in Visual Studio automatically. In addition to that, I still get my HTML preview and style sheet that I got in Internet Explorer down below. So let me go and click on that, select that, and I'll add some more real estate. So I see Drew Robbins' name is hard-coded there. And I kind of remember what happened now. When we were testing this application, we decided that we were actually going to just hard-code this. Just in case something happened, you know, it would make it a lot easier to test. So let's go and change that. So I want to grab his actual name. That's cool. Let me save that. Similar to what we saw earlier with the blend in Visual Studio where a change in one place was recognized in another, as I made change to my profile, you'll see that I also get a warning within the Page Inspector telling me, like, hey, something changed here. Do you want to go and reload the page? In this case, I do, so I'll just click on it. I'm just going to reload. We see that the name has disappeared because the user is not authenticated. But there's still a problem, right? I still see the person's picture. So something's off, right? I don't know kind of what's going on here. So let's go through and take a better look at this code and see if we can figure out what's going on. Okay, so as I take a look, I think I see what's going on. All of this profile code probably shouldn't be appearing. And the reason why it shouldn't be appearing is because this person's not authenticated yet. So let's actually do an authentication check. So if I go through and I add this if. Once again, using IntelliSense. It's authenticated. Let's block that all in. All right, that looks good to me. We'll go through and save it. We could see that the person's information has now been stripped because I've updated my code. So that is great. Now let me go and actually test this in another browser. So let me go through and select Firefox, run my application. We could see that I now have my login page. The person's details aren't there anymore. I could actually go and log in. and I have the list of tickets, and the user is now authenticated. So you saw very easily now that with Visual Studio 2012, I'm actually able to go and create these websites and really easily find where my issues are because I'm able to drill down using the Page Inspector. But not only that, I could actually take advantage of the different browsers and pull up the type of browsers I need to do my browser compat. So a lot of things we're doing that helps you get up and running and making the best out of your development experience. So let's switch gears. Now let's talk a bit about the engineering trends. So we talked a lot about kind of what users are experiencing and some of the changes that we made in Visual Studio 2012 for great end user experiences. But engineering is changing as well. In one aspect, we see a lot more agile practices. And when we say agile practices, we don't necessarily mean that you have an agile team and you're doing Scrum and all those things. But people are leveraging different methodologies in order to develop applications in a way that's best suitable for their team. We also find that with these different experiences, testing becomes that much more important. We've now reached a state where people expect things just to work. So we want more testing advancements. And then one of the big themes that a lot of people heard earlier today is this whole notion of DevOps, where your developers and operations sometimes are the same people or at a minimum work side by side. And then underpinning a lot of this is a lot of developer services. We see a lot of people doing source control and project management and other software engineering practices all hosted in the cloud. So when we do those things, we like to think of this continuous value of delivery. This whole notion that you define what your project is, you develop it, and then you have operations to continue to manage it, right? So you start out by defining it, right? And some of the problems that people face are misunderstood requirements and conflicting priorities. Or when you go to develop your application, you see that you get a lot of interruptions, so you end up losing focus, or you have unmet user expectations. And then when you finally deploy it, and you try to operate it in production, you can't get actionable feedback, and you can't reproduce issues that you have in production. So within the Visual Studio family, we've included a lot of great tools to help you address a lot of these issues. I'm not going to cover these today, but we have a lot of great ALM sessions, and I have a list of tracks that you could attend where you can learn more about how we could take advantage of all these features to help your organization run more efficiently. And with that, I'm actually going to showcase one last demo. And this case, it's actually the Feedback Manager tool. So those of you who have not seen Team Foundation Service, this is actually our Team Foundation Service preview. This is a quick account that I've created for myself. I want to go through and I want to request feedback on that Azure application that we had deployed. So I just bring up a request for feedback. Shows up here, I could select different people on my team that I want to get feedback from. In this case, I'm going to get it from myself, but from a different account. I could list how to get the application, whether it's on a remote machine, whether there's a client app to install, or whether there's a web app. In this case, we're going to use the web app, and I'm just going to go and grab the URL and enter in there. And then here I could say what's the type of feedback that I want to get. So I'll just say UI feedback. Go through and do a quick preview. Yep, that looks good to me. Let me go and send that request for feedback. And because this is in the cloud, all this will be handled behind the scenes for me. So once this feedback is submitted, for the other person who's on my team, they will in turn receive an email on the actions that they need to take. So if I go into the other account, you could see here eventually the email will come in, but in the interest of time, I'll pull up an existing one. This is an email on what to do. In this case, I'm actually going to just copy the URL, but you don't necessarily have to do that. You could also click on the link. If you're sending this to somebody who does not necessarily have Visual Studio installed, for example, you might want to send this to a business requirements person, they could actually download the Feedback Manager client for free. So once again, incorporating your entire team into your development process. Let me go through and click the link. It's going to launch my Feedback Manager client. We've been having a few issues with the network today, so hopefully this one will agree with us. It goes through and it connects. We can see that the instructions are here. It says open in any browser. I could just click on the link. It's going to go through it, loads my application, the one that we previously deployed to Azure in the cloud. Okay, that looks great. Click Next. And I'm going to go through and I'm going to take another screenshot. So let me actually delete that. So I'm taking a look at this application. There's a few things about it. I would like to update it. I think it should also be Visual Studio Purple. So I could go through, I could say, let's take a screenshot. And it's very simple. I could just go through and drag the region that I care about. It gets captured right there. I have an image. I could go through, I could double click on it, and it will open up your default image editor. And with that, I'll just go through and say, look at this region here. That's what I want to be purple. Go and save that. As I save it, you'll notice that it actually went and updated within the screenshot in my feedback manager tool. And I'll just say, make purple. Looks good. Submit and close. And what it's doing now is it's actually sending the feedback I just created and putting that into the Team Foundation service so that when I go back and I actually take a look at my different things, I requested feedback, I could actually go and take a look at my work items. And the great thing about this being a cloud-enabled tool is that wherever I am, I could actually just go and get the information and take action on it. Like I see, I got a feedback response. Looks like the connection issues persist. But what I'd be able to do is right there from Team Foundation service is actually go in and get the feedback that was sent to me and then take actions on it. So once again, just skimming the surface on what we could do. And once again, there's many sessions you could attend on this. A few final things I want to call out before the session ends is one of them is that with Team Explorer Everywhere, we recognize that a lot of environments tend to be heterogeneous. So it's more than just the Microsoft stack. If you also are using Eclipse, for example, you could actually get the Team Explorer Everywhere. So that way you could then incorporate that into your Team Foundation server and once again make your team more productive as a whole. So we covered a lot of things. So kind of as a quick recap, I'd like everyone to remember that if you're thinking about developing modern and consumer and business applications, Visual Studio 2012 includes support for the latest platforms. We simplified and made more productive the development experience so that way you could get more out of your coding time. And we've also done a lot to make teams work better together with a lot of collaborative aspects with Team Foundation Server and Team Foundation Service as well. Some related content for all of you. We have a lot of great sessions throughout TechEd, so I please hope that you'll enjoy a lot of the ones in the dev track. I just called out a few above. One I want to note is today, for the first time, we made HTML clients within Visual Studio Lightswitch available to all. So you can go to dev347 with Jay Schmelzer and learn more about it. Also for the .NET framework with dev331. A lot of great things there. But the other thing, too, is that if you don't have time to attend some of these sessions, a lot of experts who develop these tools will be in the Visual Studio booth throughout TechEd. So feel free to stop by during your free time and go talk to some of them and see and share with them some of the problems that you're encountering, and maybe they could go and help you out. You could download Visual Studio 2012 directly from our Microsoft.com/Visual Studio. You'll see the links there. And then also within MSDN, you could get a lot of information. So I want to thank you very much for your time. We skimmed the surface on Visual Studio 2012, but I hope all of you get a chance to evaluate it and have a good time with it. And please don't forget to fill out your evals, because that's useful for knowing if this information was relevant and how we could improve it for the future. And I also have a lot of I Love Visual Studio stickers. So feel free to come up, ask me any questions you have, or get them as well. Thank you for your time. Thank you.